Praise to you, God of our salvation. Your generous gifts surpass all we can ask or imagine. You have delivered us from the exile of sin and restored us to new life in Jesus Christ. Amen. Have a seat. Oh, that gospel. Did you hear that? Did you see that? Oh, now we're going to be here all day because I got a lot to say about this. We had 8 verses. In 8 short but complex verses, John, our gospel writer, lays out to us, encapsulates for us, distills for us 2 really important theological concepts. We're going to look at both of them. But the way that John structures the gospel is important, because that's the clue that gives us the truth that we're after today. The 2 things that he talks about are that human-divine relationship, the one I go on and on about all the time, because I think it's really important. And then he balances that with humanity's flaw. That feature, that attribute of our human nature that gets in the way of the human-divine relationship, confounds that human-divine conversation that happens all the time, every day, every moment. But let's look at this one at a time. John sets up for us not a parallel, but a mirror image in this short scene. And he sets it up with the Last Supper in mind. Did you see that? Did that sound familiar with what you heard in the gospel today? So it's very similar, but he sets it up not as a parallel, because that would be sort of 2 of the same thing, but he sets this up as a mirror image, right? In a mirror image, you cannot shake your own hand, right? Because it's the opposite. So watch how he does this. He creates a timestamp at the very beginning of the gospel. He says that this moment takes place 6 days before the Passover. He doesn't have to say anything about the Passover, because it's not the Passover. It's like a week before the Passover. It's like if I were to give you an Easter sermon today, you'd be like, why is she doing that? So he sets this up. He puts in a lot of these unnecessary references to the story, right? But he puts them in for a reason. So there's this reference to Passover that we don't necessarily need, but he puts it in there to get us to start thinking about this mirror image, right? And then he puts in a reference to a meal that happens within the context of Passover. Does it sound familiar? And then he talks about Lazarus was there, and John says, whom he raised from the dead. Do we need to know that? Not necessary to the story about a meal that's shared, but he puts it in there anyways. He's talking about Lazarus, who was raised from the dead. Who else was raised from the dead around about Passover time? Mirror image. And then he says, there's this dinner that was served. Who came not to serve but to be served? No, wait. Who came not to be served but to serve? Apparently here it's Martha. So we have a mirror image of Jesus in the person who is doing the serving. The meal is prepared not by Peter and John. Those are the 2 that Jesus sends ahead of him to prepare the Passover supper. It's Mary and Martha and Lazarus. So different people are preparing this meal. In the Passover supper, who is that one person at the table that we should be aware of? Here it's Lazarus. So Lazarus takes the place of Judas at the table in this moment where they share that really important thing. I'm going to talk about what that thing is in a second. And then there's what the story is probably most remembered for, the washing of the feet. Wait, but it's not really the washing of the feet, is it? Or is it? Washing is done with perfume and hair. How do you wash someone's feet with your hair? What kind of posture do you need to take in order to do that? Pretty low, eh? But that's what she does. And she does it with this material, this perfume. And perfume fills the whole house with fragrance. Everyone in the room knows. Everyone in the house knows. Probably people outside the house, too. That perfume isn't just perfume. That perfume does a couple of things. First, it represents the deep, deep love that she has for Jesus. It also creates a memory. Olfactory memory, right? You know what that is. You catch the scent of something, you go, oh, that reminds me of... Whenever I smell Chanel No. 5, I think of my mom going out for dinner with Dad. Every time. What we smell creates this indelible memory. Jesus tries to create the same thing, but with food. Do this in memory of me. Remember with your cells that are fed with food. Remember at the molecular level. Here, a memory is created in that olfactory sense. And it's strong. And it reminds everyone who smells that again that there was this deep, deep love that was shared. The human-divine relationship is that thing that they share in that moment. And specifically here, it's a conversation. John tries to create this conversation. Conversation isn't a monologue. The conversation we have with God isn't a sermon. You know, some people call it a sermon. Some people call it a hostage situation. It's a two-way back and forth. You say something, and then I see something relative and relevant to what you just said. And back and forth, this is the beauty of conversation, and that's what's happening here. This conversation, this human-divine relationship that's described between Mary and Jesus, humanity and divinity, is the apex of that human-divine relationship. God is so pleased to be in conversation with us. God really wants to listen to what you have to say, and God really wants to talk back to you and respond to your concerns and your joys. And in this moment, we have that depth of divine spiritual conversation. It's typified by trust. Trust enough to put yourself into that really awkward position to wash someone's feet with your hair, to wash someone's feet with the top of your head. Trust. A mutual outpouring of affection and care for one another. An extravagance of outpouring. A pound of this perfume. I don't know if a pound weighed the same then as it does now, but it was a lot. Extravagance. That's God's love for you. That's God's love for the world. When you engage in this conversation, this deeply spiritual connection with the divine, there is an extravagance of love and care for your story and your story, for what bothers you, for what overjoys you, for what causes you to sing, what causes you to cry. That's that deep conversation. And it happens here in the gospel, and it happens without the passage of a single word. Mary doesn't talk. There is no verbal dialogue in this moment. She simply gets up. Speaks Where words fail, actions speak. Hold that. Now think about Jesus washing the feet on Monday, Thursday. Does he say what he's doing? No. He does not explain himself. There are no words that Jesus can use in that moment to express that extravagance of love, that extravagance of trust, affection, peace. Peter will say, "Are you going to do that to my feet?" And Jesus says, "You don't know what I've done for you yet. Later you'll know, but right now there are no words to describe this." That's that human divine creation. It's fully belonging to one another, which is greater than words can express. The response in this conversation happens next week when Jesus takes what Mary has done, washed his feet, with an extravagance that smells wonderful. And Jesus says, "And now I will respond to you," because that's what we do in a conversation. God takes this one thing that Mary did, and he says, "Okay, now I'm going to do something. Now I'm going to talk back to you, but I'm going to do it differently." Where Mary spends the extravagance in oil that fills our olfactory memory, Jesus will respond with the same kind of extravagance with his blood and with his life. God does this with humanity. God takes those little things that we do and makes them bigger. God takes that little bit of fish and bread and makes it bigger. God takes a little bit of your love and makes it bigger. God takes this little bit of oil and makes the whole world with love through his blood, through his trust in us, with his life. That's the holy human divine relationship in conversation form that goes beyond words. It's spoken in action. Okay, but then there's this other thing. In the midst of this love fest, Judas interrupts. This is the other thing that's happening today. Along with the concept of the human-divine relationship, we also have the concept of the human sinful nature and our human flaw. And Judas, God bless him, is our touchstone for our flaws. Judas interrupts with words in a moment that's being described without words. He jumps in. And structurally, John has something to say about that with that parenthetical information that we read about. Also, unnecessary references. But John puts these parentheticals in there to remind us what's going to happen on the Last Supper. So he's drawing those two things together for us in our imagination. But Judas, embodying the human flaw, sin, he interrupts. There's always something. There's always something you could have done, could have, should have, but you didn't. And it gets us double-thinking ourselves, gets us doubting ourselves. He was trying to get Mary to doubt herself. In the midst of this extravagance of love and trust, Judas wants her to go, "Oh, maybe I shouldn't have done that. I could have sold it, I guess. How many people could we have fed if we had just sold that?" But no, the important part of that moment was her being there and showing her trust and demonstrating her love and her care and her affection for Jesus. And Jesus, God, receiving our affection and our love and our full trust that we're going to be okay, even though we're down on the ground, upside down, in the most vulnerable position we could possibly be in. We trust, and God accepts our trust. But no, human failing is our inability to trust. Is that desire for us to go, "Oh, no, wait, maybe I can sell this and feed the poor instead. Maybe I could do all these other things instead with this moment," instead of being fully immersed in that conversation with God. Sin sows doubt. Sin sows second thoughts. Sin distracts us from what our soul longs for what God longs for every day. Sin enslaves us and prevents us from being in that holy conversation, that deep spiritual connection with God. That's the point of sin, and that's where humanity's flaw gets hooked every single time. Just when we're getting into that conversation with God, we think, you know, I could go to the grocery store on my way home, pick up those things. You know what I need to do? I forgot I was supposed to do that thing. It disrupts, it interrupts, and it prevents us from getting into that deep spiritual conversation that's so important and so valued by God. So valued that God will take that conversation topic that we begin and expand upon it in God's response to us. But God won't stand for it. God doesn't stand for sin. God never does. God is always looking for a way to reconnect with us, to re-engage, to reignite that holy, deep conversation, to continue to establish, re-establish, and support the trust that we have given God and that God gives us. And so what does God do? Interrupts right back. Jesus says, leave her alone. Oh. Leave her alone. Don't distract her. What she's doing is right. What she's doing is demonstrating this extravagance of love in perfume form, in humble posture form. Leave her alone. Wouldn't it be great to have that presence of mind for ourselves when we find sin or distraction, our own flaws and failings interrupting us, getting in the way of our progress toward deepening our relationship with God? Wouldn't it be great to have the presence of mind to turn around and say to those sins and distractions, leave me alone. I'm talking with God now. And God is listening and responding back. Listen. Do you hear that? You can't hear it with your ears. When God speaks, God doesn't talk through these fleshy bits on the side of our heads. God's words to us bypass the ears and goes right to the heart, right to the soul. God responds to us deeply, without words. Those are the two big concepts that I think John is trying to tell us about in the gospel today. And it leaves us with a couple of questions. What extravagance would you like to pour over Jesus? Whatever your version of perfume is, where can you go in this last week of Lent? We got one more week of Lent before we hear God's response to this conversation in the Last Supper. In this few days before the Passover, as John references for us, where can you find a silent place to go and be in communion with God, where you can pour over the extravagance of yourself onto the feet of Jesus and then listen with your heart, with no interruptions? Listen for what God will say back to you. What extravagance will be returned to you tenfold in that quiet, wordless communion that you create with God. In this last week of Lent, I implore you, I invite you, I dare you, set a table in your heart, in a quiet room, in your bedroom when no one else is around, in your mind. Set a table like Mary and Martha did and invite Jesus to a meal of unspoken words. And then shower God with an extravagance of some part of you. Don't worry about the shoulds. Forget about your grocery list or all the things you could have done with this precious time of yours. And listen for what God has to say back to you in that moment. And I think I'm pretty confident when I say, I promise you, God will shower you back with all the more so of extravagance. Allow no interruptions. Bring your whole self to God. And then come back next week, and we'll hear what God has to say to us when we come to the Last Supper. Amen.